This week, we're going to be finishing off our little mini-series that we've been doing entitled Foundations, where we're really trying to take a look at what's at the heart of the King's Arms, what we're all about. And so far, together, we've looked at our vision for King's House. Simon started off with that. And then we went on to look at the culture of the church family. And then last week, Phil picked up for us looking at the purpose of the church together. And just to say, if you've not been around for any of those talks, if you've missed one or two of them, can I really encourage you to get the podcast, because there's some really crucial information in there, and also to give you a better understanding of what we're about as a church. But as for this morning, I'd like to bring the series to a close by looking for us at the subject of goals, our goals as a church. Because as important as it is to know what the culture's to be and how we want to go about using this building, it's also vital that we understand what our goals are together as a church family, what we're trying to do, so we know that what we're aiming at together. Now, obviously, having goals for any organisation these days is very much in vogue. So companies will have corporate goals that they're going for. Retail firms will set sales targets. Schools will have learning objectives and academic attainment they want to be going for. The list goes on and on. And often these organisations will post up their goals on the wall, perhaps frame them somehow, and maybe put up motivational posters with a little tagline underneath. So you might see a picture of an athlete crossing a finish line with a phrase underneath, "Success is on the far side of failure," or something like that. I came across one the other day with somebody reaching up for something on a high shelf, and it said, "The only difference between try and triumph is a little umph," which I thought possibly was a tad cheesy. And I think people are beginning to feel a bit jaded with all this sort of motivation and the pep talks that go on, so much so that you can now buy demotivational posters for your little office cubicle to put on the wall with pithy little phrases underneath. Let me try and show you what I mean. Here's two or three for you this morning. Demotivational posters. This one here says, "If at first you don't succeed, skydiving is not for you." There was another one with a picture of a match in a flame which said, "If at first you don't succeed, burn all the evidence," which I quite liked. We've got this one up here, "Optimism. Just because it moves slow doesn't mean you can't catch it." So that's that one there. And then the next one up here. This is for Star Trek fans. "Expendability. Kirk, Scott, McCoy and Ensign Ricky are beaming down to the planet. Guess who's not coming back?" I think that's my personal favourite. So I thought you'd appreciate that. So I guess it begs the question, what's the difference between what we're looking at this morning in our goals and, say, sales targets that a retail firm would set? What's the difference? Well, let me just give you a couple of differences this morning. Firstly, I want to say to you, the goals that we're going to look at in a moment, they're not edicts that have been dreamt up in some company boardroom for everybody else to implement. Rather, what we're going to do this morning is we're going to look at what we believe God is calling us to. We're going to look at the things that God would have us invest our time and energies into. And secondly, when we look at some of the numbers up here on the screen in a moment, I'd like you to bear in mind that these aren't just figures on a spreadsheet. Rather, each one of these figures represents a life touched. Just to give you an example of what I mean, one young woman wrote in recently what it was like for her to start coming along to the King's Arms. She said this: "My first 2 to 3 weeks, I sat on my own because the few people I knew were involved with the King's Kids and couldn't sit with me. However, before those meetings had started, Simon had said, 'Why don't we just say hi to someone we don't know sitting near or around us?' At which point, it was Mike Green sitting near me who turned to me and introduced himself in such a way that it felt spontaneous rather than forced, which made me feel a little less alone and a little less on the outside. One of the things that stood out was people who'd introduced themselves 1 week, then remembered who I was and made an effort to talk to me and see how I was getting on the following week. That made me feel less of just a face in the crowd, but much more part of the church. People offering lifts for students and inviting them to dinner is such a blessing. It really makes you feel like an individual rather than part of the crowd who nobody notices." When we look at these figures in a moment, Please bear in mind that that young woman is represented in these figures. And when we talk about wanting to welcome in vast numbers of people, it simply means so that we can replicate that story over and over again. Okay? So that's what I'd love you to bear in mind. Let's take a look, shall we, at some of the goals that we set ourselves. I've got these up on the screen. If you remember, it was back in 2008 that we said that rather than just set goals for 1 year, what we felt we should do is set goals over the next 5 years to sort of give us more to aim at. So we prayed and considered and consulted with a whole lot of different people and felt that these were the goals that we should be going for. And if you remember, they're sort of based around the numbers 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So let me just whisk you through them and then we can see how we got on with them. Number one, we said that we wanted to be asking God that by the end of 2012 that we would have 500 people as part of the King's Arms signed up in their hearts and bought into all that God's doing here. Secondly, we said that we were wanting to have 40 small groups by the end of 2012 to house all those people, to give all those people something of a home, a place to really connect. The next one was us going out on a limb a little bit. Our next goal, we said that we wanted to take some steps of faith and trust God for 30 miracles, not in church meetings, but out on the streets of Bedford. So we pushed the boat out and said, that's what we're going to go for. I think at the time of setting them, we had probably one, possibly two. The fourth goal was this. Not only that we would just gather a whole bunch of people, but that group of people would grow in their sense of commitment to all that God's doing here. We talk about people going for the three S's, both serving and also part of a small group and then supporting financially all that God's doing here. And we felt we wanted to double the number of people that were doing all three of those things. And then lastly, we set perhaps the most ambitious goal of all. Back in 2008, we said that we wanted to pray and trust God for one building that would be able to house 500 people with space for King's Kids activities, training, offices, and also the chance to reach out wider into the community. So that's what we came up with. What I'd like to do now is very briefly let you know how we're doing on those goals. Some of them, you've probably got a rough idea already, yeah? But let me fill you in. Let me take the first one there. 500 people, 500 adults and older teenagers. Well, when we set the goal and we started out in January 08 on this journey, we had 318 adults and older teenagers. According to Royden's figures, and as we all know, Royden's figures are always right, we currently now, in November 2010, have 450 people on the books, so to speak. So that's going pretty well. According to Royden's graph, we're headed towards 500 people by the end of 2012. So that's fantastic news. Next was our goal for 40 small groups. We started in January 08 with 26 small groups. And in November 2010, we now have, wait for it, 26 small groups. Yeah, that one's not going terribly well so far. We might possibly come back to that in a minute. There are all kinds of reasons behind that. People, we've started a whole number of groups, but also some people for various reasons have had to stop leading groups, many of them changes in job and busyness of life, all that sort of thing. But we're aware it's an area that needs attention. That's one of the reasons why we've asked Phil onto staff, because he's going to be championing that whole area. So we'll come back to that in a minute. Thirdly, this one of setting the goal for miracles out on the streets, men and women of faith that we were. We set the target at 30. By the end of 2008, we had completely blown that one out of the water. To date, this is where we're up to in November 2010, we have seen 192 people healed on the streets of God. Just incredible. It seems like God is itching to move if only we'll give the opportunity. So we've seen people healed out on the streets, but also in pubs. We saw one person healed on a boat, and we've even known one lady to be healed in the toilets at Centre Parks. You know, it seems like give God any opportunity and he will go for it. So we've since revised that goal, if you remember. We said instead of 30, let's times that by 10, and we're going for 300. So 192, we're not doing too badly on our revised goal for 300. And then lastly, next we had this area of the triple S's. Here the story isn't quite so encouraging. We started out in January 08 with 113 people who were serving, supporting, and part of a small group. Obviously, the number of people doing one or two of those three things is much larger, but the number of people doing all three was 113. And after a lot of dedicated work and effort put into this, we've gone from 113 people doing all three of these things to 108 people doing all three of those. So our mission now is to find out who those five people are. Now we'll stop serving and get a hold of them and say, what are you playing at? No. We've got some other strategies. Again, let me come back to that one in a moment. But let's finish on something of a high, shall we? Back in 2008, we said that we wanted at the end of 2012 to have a building with a 500-seater auditorium and children's facilities and all the trimmings. To be honest, it's a little bit difficult to build suspense for the outcome of this one. I'm guessing you've got a rough idea as how we've gone on achieving this goal, being as you're sat in it. There's a clue there. So at the end of November of 2012, we have one fantastic building. Thank you, God. I tell you, as I sat there in worship just now, and as worship went on, I just sat there and thought, this is why we've got this building. That's just what it's all about. And so it's such a privilege to be in here. I want us to be immensely grateful for all that God has done. As we look across those five different things, it's so exciting to see all that God is doing amongst us. I hope you find that helpful and sort of spurs you on to all that God might do in the future. So the first thing to say is we're tremendously grateful for all that God is doing. I don't want to just take that for granted. But equally, I'm also conscious that there's still very much to do. We desperately need more small groups, as you saw from there, and also people to lead them. And whilst we've got an incredibly committed bunch of people, there's still a way to go to help everyone connect with the mission that we've got going on here. So I guess the obvious question is, what's next for us? How should we be adjusting things as we move on from here? And just as sort of the last half of my talk, I wanted to spend a little bit of time looking at, well, what's next for us? How do we respond to this? And as I prayed and thought about this, just a few verses from Scripture keep coming back to mind, just three or four verses from Ephesians chapter 2. And I wanted to very briefly read them through to you and just focus on one verse. Ephesians chapter 2, you don't need to look it up, it's here on the screen behind me. It says this. This is Paul writing the book of Ephesians to the church in Ephesus. One of the predominant themes, really, in Ephesians is the church. And in particular, this passage is looking at the unifying work that God is doing amongst the church. And he says this, "So then, you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone, in whom the whole structure, being joined together, grows into the temple of the Lord. In him you are also," this is the bit I want us to focus on, "are being built together into a dwelling place for God by the Holy Spirit." It's that last verse that really has me nailed this week. Verse 22, talking about being built together into the dwelling place of God. And as I look at the goals that we've got and what we're aiming at as a church, I realize that we're seeing the power of God really manifest amongst us. We're seeing the provision of God. This building is evidence of that. But the next step, perhaps, for us is increasingly to see God building us together as a church family. You see, as I look at the New Testament, the Bible has no understanding of merely attending church. It only understands being built together. The idea here really is one of construction. The image is of stones or bricks being laid upon one another to form a building. It's a theme that's picked up elsewhere in Colossians, but also by the Apostle Peter. And of course, if you think about it, a brick on its own isn't a whole lot of use. Here's one I prepared earlier. I pulled it out of a pillar out the back there. A brick on its own isn't much use to you. Imagine, you wake up Christmas morning and you unwrap the present that your nearest and dearest have bought for you, only to discover it's this. You would be a tad disappointed, because a brick isn't a lot of use to people, is it really? I mean, I guess you could use it to perhaps prop open a door, or hold down some papers or bash somebody over the head with it. But your options are fairly limited, aren't they? Let's be honest about it. In the same way, the New Testament has no understanding of solo Christians, just people on their own. It isn't a frame of reference within the New Testament. Instead, it has this concept of one brick, one stone being laid upon another. Because, of course, when you get more than one brick or one stone, then you start to get something you can build with. You can lay one upon the other. You can knit them together to form something that's strong and something that's durable. And that's really what we're meant to be like as the church, being built together onto one another. And so what I want to do this morning, just as we close, is I'd like to look at three ways that we get built into one another. It's an active word there in the New Testament. How God wants to do that amongst us. I've just got three things, three responses really, for you to that. The first way I think we can be built together as a church family is through small groups. The reality is this. With now 450 people coming along regularly to the King's Arms, it reaches the point where I struggle to remember everybody's name. To be honest with you, I've got four kids, and I get confused there most of the time. I don't care how much of an extrovert you are, it's very difficult to have 450 close friends. That's why we have to have small groups. That's one way of us being built in together. Think of it this way. There are literally thousands and thousands of people in Bedford and the surrounding area who desperately need to know the love of God. So the church has to get bigger. That's the mission. We've got to reach all of these different people. But at the same time, I need to be having meaningful friendships. I need to be growing spiritually alongside others. So the church has to get smaller too at the same time. I gave a lift to somebody a while back in my car, and we were talking about this and what small groups were like, and she said something so profound I had to write it down. She said this to me. She said, "Sundays are great for me, but small group is where the church really happens, where you get to know one another. Small group for me is what church is all about," she said. So it's through small group that we grow together, that we gently challenge each other, that we have a laugh together, if necessary, cry together. And perhaps most of all, small groups provide a natural home for new people to get added into the church on their journey of faith. Ask just a couple of people to comment on their experience of going to a small group, and I realize this won't be everybody's experience, but one guy said this. He said, "I was a little apprehensive about joining a small group for the first time, but I found listening to others really useful and discovered that these people had difficulties in life just like me. I felt relieved that there were people I could share my thoughts and experiences with and not feel judged or ashamed or undervalued." Another young woman put it like this. She said, "I felt accepted by everyone and was invited around for dinner by the couple that run the group and who are amazing people. And they invited me to other social gatherings, which made me feel really included. And as a result, I've now been converted to the X Factor, but have also made lots of great friends through that." Just to say, the X Factor thing isn't compulsory. Other groups watch the "I'm not really a celebrity, don't get me out of here because I want to raise my profile." You can choose whichever groups you go to. See, the reality is we need each other. You were never intended to go through life alone. The temptation is to think, "I don't need to be part of a small group. I'm fine as I am." But maybe think of it this way. Perhaps there's a small group out there that needs you. I'm not pretending for a moment that it's always easy or it's always straightforward. Not everyone's experience has always been positive. Sometimes we need to stick with it for a while. In one sense, you could say that I've got very little in common with the people in my small group. Mostly they're younger than me, at a different stage of life, from different backgrounds. I've got nothing in common with them, except for the fact that they're my brothers and sisters. And if not now, at some point, you're going to need to lean on somebody else. It's not practical to expect here that Simon can care for 450 people. He's good, but he's not that good. We have to learn to care for each other. Just to give you one example, Simon and Faith Dwight, who are here this morning, have just had a gorgeous newborn boy called Adlai. So let's give him a cheer, Simon and Faith Dwight. He's a gorgeous little boy. I've seen the photos on Facebook. It's great to have them here with us this morning. But little Adlai gave his mum and dad a bit of a scare when he was first born. He was born with an infection, and they couldn't raise his blood sugar levels. So he spent the first few days of his life in intensive care. I asked Simon earlier on this week what it was like to lean on others during that time. He said this: "Whatever we've needed, people have provided. A place to stay when we first arrived in Bedford. Support whilst Adlai was sick. Really authentic friendships. Meals with a newborn. And so much prayer through it all." You see, I want each one of us to know what it's like to give and receive support through the storms of life. If you're not part of a small group, can I ask you to reconsider? This is one of those areas for us to work on as a church. There's information that the guys in the black t-shirts can give you on this. Also, can I ask, if you're waiting to join a small group, you filled in the card and so forth, will you be patient with us? We're just trying to our best to incorporate as many new people as quickly as we possibly can. And maybe if you've been part of a small group for a while, can I perhaps ask you to think about whether it's time to lead a small group of your own? Maybe do the training course, no strings attached, and just see if it's for you. Or maybe you used to lead a small group once upon a time. Let me say this. I hope you've had a really good rest. But maybe now it's time to get back into the saddle and provide a home for some of the new people in the church. So that's the first way that we're knitted together, built together, is through small groups. The second way is this. It's the way that we serve each other. Serving is just part of being in the family. It's part of the responsibility, but it's also part of the joy. So when my family gets together for dinner, everybody pitches in. One of the kids sets the table, another one will get the cups out, somebody else will help dish up. Generally not Zachary, otherwise it's spaghetti bolognese off the floor again. But everybody does something. Everybody pitches in. The only ones who don't do anything, the only times we've had somebody not doing anything is when we've had a newborn. When we've got somebody brand new in the family, and then we serve them. I guess the analogy is the same for the church family. When we gather together, it's an opportunity for everybody to join in, to get involved. And it should only be the brand new people, our guests, the visitors, who we then serve. Let me just quickly give you two ways that you can serve. Number one, you can contribute your specific God-given talents. So you might have a particular skill in a specific area. So, for instance, we have Toby Kosh, who is a graphics genius, who does a lot of the designs that you see around you. We have people like Lindsley and Edmund, who pour over spreadsheets on our finance team. Or Chris Tuffin, who does technical things with telephones that I don't understand. Or Sarah Butteries, who's advised us on child protection issues. You can give your specific talent to the church. But secondly, you can serve by being willing to do anything. Jesus said that following him means to lay down our lives. And to be honest, most of us are just discovering what our specific gifts are anyway. In the meantime, it's about being willing to do anything in order to serve the church. A few months back, we were hosting one of our conferences and we were using another church's facility. And whilst the worship was going on, I nipped out just to use the loo. Only to discover that for some reason, one of the urinals was blocked up. Now, bear with me if you're ever delicate disposition. One of the urinals was blocked up, which is what I think was a whole load of chopped ham in the urinal. Forgive the graphic nature, but I couldn't tell whether it had been chopped up and dropped in there or had been regurgitated by some means. It was hard to tell. And at this point, a couple of thoughts go through my mind. First is, yuck, that's disgusting. And the second thought is, I wonder whose job that is. To clear that out, I thought about this for a while and felt that the stewards probably wouldn't be best blessed by me calling them in to do it. So I figured I'm just going to have to deal with it. So I went into the kitchens, got a carrier bag and set about my work. This is going to surprise you, but whilst I was picking out sicked up ham from a used urinal, I wasn't thinking, at last, Lord, I found my calling. You know, all my life has been preparation up to this point, and now I see meaning in everything. It wasn't like that for me. I just picked the stuff out of the bowl and did it. Part of being in the King's Arms is discovering your God-given talents, but also part of it is just being willing to do anything. You know, that meeting, Simon was on the stage and was preaching, and I think it was a crowd of about 300 people. Meanwhile, I was out the back sorting out the toilets. I'll tell you, that day we both served God, and we'll both have our reward. It's just the same for you and I in all that we do. Part of being in this church means just getting stuck into whatever's going on. How do you want to pitch in? If you're good with figures, you could help run a budget. If you can read a recipe book, then you can cook a meal for the Friday night meeting. If you know how to drink tea and chat to people, then you can volunteer at the hostel. If you've got a car, then you can give people lifts to the prayer meeting. If you've got a home, then you can host people. We really need that. If you've got earplugs, you can help out with the King's Kids. Whatever it is something you've got... I'm kidding. Whatever it is something that you've got to bring to the party. Are you willing just to roll up your sleeves and get stuck in? Maybe you used to serve and then stopped. Let me just say to you, I don't think serving is a period of time in our lives. Rather, it's a lifestyle that we're to adopt. I tell you, on launch Sunday the other week, I wandered around just to see how everything was going. And it was great to see everything that was happening. But the place with the best atmosphere, the warmest, friendliest, most fun environment, was actually out the back in the kitchens. Just four or five people having a laugh together and washing up for 2 hours. Serving the church, serving God, and just hanging out. We have so many willing servants in this church. I'm simply asking you, will you join in? Be part of it. Be part of this church means serving, plain and simple. And lastly, we're meant to be building together through our finances. I'm staggered at the generosity of this church. As most of you know, we started building, raising money for the building fund long before we even had the building that we were going for. This used to perplex the heck out of all the other New Frontiers pastors who, you know, they'd ask me, you know, how's it going with the building? Fine. Have you raised much money? Yes, 500,000 so far. Great. What's the building like that you're going for? Is it a warehouse? Is it retail? And I would say, actually, we haven't got anything yet. They'd say, oh, fine. So you've got a plot of land? No plot of land. Oh, wow, you must have a lot of wealthy people with spare cash in your church. No, just a lot of student loans. That was sort of how the conversation would go with them. It's down to the generosity of this church. People would wonder how it was possible. I know how it's possible. I don't know the exact details of who gives what. I don't want to know. But I hear the occasional stories of what people are doing. It's possible because one couple put the deposit they were saving up for a house into the building fund, even though it's getting tougher and tougher for first-time buyers. It's possible because another guy I know decided to put most of his family inheritance into the building fund rather than sit back and live comfortably. It's possible because another couple gave away the £5,000 they'd been saving up for 9 years for a new car. It's possible because people have forgone a new kitchen, not taken foreign holidays, not bought CDs, sold jewellery, eBayed their possessions and tithed their pocket money. That's how it's possible. If you're joining this church, you are joining a financially radical bunch of people. To be part of this church means to love God from the heart of your wallet. I say it unashamedly. According to Royden's figures, around 48 to 50% of us give regularly to the church. Think of what we could do if we all gave regularly and consistently, like 1 Corinthians 9 talks about. Think of what God could do through us in that kind of scenario, giving first of all to the church and then to the building fund if we so wish. I guess the question I want to leave you with this morning is this. Will you join in? Will you join in? Hear me right, it's so good to have you here on a Sunday morning. But attendance isn't the same thing as belonging. Will you roll up your sleeves, serve with us, maybe join a stewarding team, volunteer at the night shelter, invest in the next generation through King's Kids, whatever it might be? Will you join a small group? Find a home and stick in there. Share your life with others through thick and thin. Will you join in on the financial adventure? giving, like I said, consistently to the church. Maybe set up a standing order, and if you want, give to the building fund. Join in. 108 of us are serving, supporting, and part of a small group. We set our goal in 2008 of having 250 people doing that by the end of 2012. I want to smash that goal altogether. Imagine what we could do if we all got hold of this. If we got hold of the simple truth that Ephesians 2 talks about, of being built together.